This is Marketplace Money from APM. I'm Tess Vigeland. A few weeks ago, we started a conversation here about religion and money. We spoke first with a leader in the Islamic faith and then with a group of Mormons about how religion informs their views of money. Today, Judaism. I recently visited Temple Beth Am here in Los Angeles. L.A. is home to one of the largest Jewish communities in the U.S. The rabbi at Temple Beth Am is Adam Kligfeld. And he had suggested that we also talk with Emily and Michael Israel, a young couple who a year ago launched LA's only kosher food truck. Now I know he made that suggestion so the Israels would bring their famous egg rolls to eat before our conversation. Rabbi Adam Kligfeld, thanks so much for being with us.
Thanks for having me.
And Emily and Michael Israel, thank you for coming in.
Thank you.
I want to share with the audience how you just described yourselves to me.
Well, I am Emily Israel, and I am the kosher egg roll queen of Los Angeles.
And as Emily's husband, it's only appropriate that I am the kosher egg roll king of Los Angeles.
And tell us briefly, do you partake in eating their wares here?
Their one-year anniversary coincides with my one-year 15-pound weight gain. So,
I bet, yeah. Given that they brought samples before we started the interview.
Now he has a treadmill in his office.
So. Yeah.
Exactly.
No, we're thrilled about what they're doing in the Jewish world, in the world of food, and just to have them as members of our community.
Rabbi, let's start with you. And, you know, this is a series about, very broadly speaking, religion and money. But how do you talk about money with your congregation? Do you?
I don't often speak about money from the pulpit. It doesn't end up being a topic of sermonica, per se. But it is very much a part of synagogue life because, for better and for worse, and I think that's both, modern religion is based on a business model in the sense that we have a real nonprofit institution, we have a real budget, we have real salaries, we have real expenses to pay, we have real financial needs that need to be addressed. And so while we make it very clear, explicitly and implicitly, that no one has ever turned away from the synagogue for financial reasons, we also are not shy about relating to our membership that in order for this wonderful synagogue enterprise and Judaism in general to keep going, there needs to be a financial basis for it.
What is the general rule? Is it the typical 10% tithe?
So you're correct that biblically speaking and in rabbinic law that developed from the Bible's verses, there was this idea that one-tenth of your income, of your flock, of your agriculture would go towards the religious enterprise, to the temple in ancient times. And I'm aware that in some religious communities, that's how they tax, for lack of a better word, their community. Our synagogue, and most American synagogues, but not all, go on a model where we have a dues structure. We have a basic amount for dues. We have lots of incentive levels for young couples. Singles pay a different rate. Those who are on fixed incomes pay a different rate. And those who can are encouraged to give more. We have some families who pay literally 20 times the annual rate for dues because they are seeing our synagogue as one of their recipients of their charity, of their tzedakah in Hebrew.
From my understanding of Judaism, there is no pressure as far as God will smote you if you don't give money to the synagogue. It's more...
Rabbi, is that accurate?
God will smite certain people.
Okay. All right. Fair enough.
Which is kind of interesting because it places the responsibility upon you as the individual to decide when you think it's appropriate to pay dues and how much your dues should be. And I think one of the challenges today that I find with people in my generation is they see the dues as something that they're required to pay when they more need the services of the synagogue, which tend to be when they have kids, which does create a bit of a problem in the sense that they're not contributing until that point.
Emily, let me ask you, what does money mean to you? And how does your Jewish faith inform that?
For me, I look at money in a very, it's much more of a emotional, spiritual way than I think my husband would look at money. So I definitely pay attention to where a product is made. What does that company do with their profits? What does, you know, what do they stand for? If I'm contributing money to them and buying this product or this service, then where does my money continue? I don't, at this point in my life, have a ton of extra money to be, you know, philanthropic with. But I do consider every purchase I make as sort of an opportunity for that as well. When we were getting married, you have a lot of money you spend on a wedding, and we were married here at Temple Beth Am in Los Angeles. So it was very important to me that, especially a large amount of money like that, is sort of going back into things that, you know, are important to me, like my synagogue and not just the synagogue getting money, but the caterer, the florist. Any purchase I make, I definitely try to connect it with more than just the product itself.
Michael, how about you? How does your faith inform how you think about the management of your money?
Being an observant Jew is not an easy thing. There's whether it's from the dietary laws or observing holidays, and there's a huge emphasis on self-control and self-accountability.
How does that manifest in your financial life?
It's completely wrapped up into our financial life, because the past year for both of us with a new business has been, for our personal finances, it's been extraordinarily tight. Every day is a new adventure. Personally, we've been very, very conservative with anything that we have to spend money on. It's really limited to the essential things that we need. And included in those essential items are temple dues, and for me, it's making a contribution to APAC. My contribution this year, I think, was $18, which I would love to contribute 1,000 times that someday. But no matter what's happening, I have to contribute something to APAC. That's just... It wouldn't be kosher, in my opinion, to pass up on that.
Well, Rabbi, what does the Jewish faith teach about managing your money?
Well, as it shouldn't come as a surprise to anyone who's dabbled at all in Jewish ideas, there are conflicting teachings. On the one hand, Judaism encourages frugality from the perspective of we don't take our riches with us. Psalms reinforces that. Life is not about amassing wealth, but about amassing meaning. And things and objects aren't worth nearly what we think they are. And at the same time, from its inception, Judaism has been an anti-ascetic tradition. You know, in the religious leaders in some religions live very intentionally deprived and therefore, from their perspective, holier lives. Judaism has never really championed that. So there's this idea that we're supposed to enjoy all of the bounty that God has given us, and that includes enjoying some of the wonderful things about the modern world, while at the same time putting proper value on them. So Judaism speaks to both sides of that, and oftentimes the message I end up sharing is based on what I assume a particular audience needs to hear. If they're erring too far in one direction, I'll give one method and reverse it, to paraphrase the idea that... religion is there to comfort the uncomfortable and discomfort the overly comfortable.
I thought that was journalism.
Yeah, it's all any-ism. So Judaism has an enormous amount to say on business ethics and how a living is earned and how a consumer, it's clear how to go into a food store as a observant Jew in terms of what food you can and cannot eat. But how do you go into an electronic store as a Jew and make that product purchase be Jewy or Jewish, right? So, and I'm speaking not about whether or not the product is legitimate for you to buy as a Jew, but how do you approach the transaction with a Torah in mind? It's an interesting thing that possibly legitimately earned, there is a stereotype there in the world of Jews hunting for bargains and being excellent negotiators. And that speaks to the part of the Jewish consciousness that's about frugality and not knowing if we're going to have any more tomorrow, so we better be very careful what we have today. Mm-hmm. But the Jewish values embedded about money are not about cheating or even over-negotiating a seller out of what they deserve to get for a particular item, because you should have as much respect for their ability to earn a living and their ability to get as much for their product as they can as you would if of your own.
Does this ring true for the two of you? And if so, that's a lot to think about when you walk into Best Buy.
Absolutely. It's something specific that we talk about a lot. When I think about a product or service that I'm purchasing, I absolutely put value in things besides just the product or just the service. You know, I value being able to go into a shoe store and try on shoes and have the customer service. Okay, so that costs more than if I ordered it on Amazon. I would never feel comfortable trying something on in a store and then going and ordering it online for another price, because I value the service and the other things going on and respect that person's business.
Michael?
Judaism is something that, when done properly, infiltrates every aspect of your life. Mm-hmm. And and in my opinion, it's most enjoyable the more you let it seep into the different areas of your life.
But, you know, Rabbi, that sounds to me very similar to just about every other religion, right? I mean, it is supposed to infiltrate every aspect of your life, including your finances, right? So how different are we, really?
It's interesting asking that question today, because today I'm actually writing a High Holiday sermon about how the general principles of lots of great ideas are quite similar. The particulars through which you experience them are what's different. And I'm comparing it. I compare love for your tradition to love to a human being. We all want to experience something similar in love, but we experience it through the particulars of one person, right? Ideally, because it's through the particulars that you can experience that kind of rapture. I think a lot of the great religions have similar ideas about the urgency with which to live life, the way to honor and value what truly deserves to be valued, and how to make a distinction between that which is central and that which is peripheral. But the forms and the rituals and the names and the language differ. If we stripped the ritual from it and you put myself and a priest and an imam in the same room, aside from it being a setup to a great druk, and we took politics and the Middle East out of it, and you asked us what we thought God demanded of us in current terms of ethical behavior, treatment of other human beings, valuing people and experiences over things, I think you'd find tremendous overlap.
And when it comes to money?
You know, money is an artifice, right? I mean, you ever think about it, it's, you know, what is a dollar bill? It's an artifice that we have agreed has a particular value. And what's artificial is the dollar bill. What's real is filling up your life and your time with things that matter, with institutions that are doing good things in the world, and having enough food to eat and enough left over to buy an egg roll.
And they are delicious egg rolls,
thank
I must
you.
Say. I hope thank I you. Have a dollar at least left over. Emily and Michael Israel and Rabbi Adam Kliegfeld, thank you all so much for this discussion. It's been great.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thanks for having us.